You are listening to Once a Raider, Always a Raider on the official Raiders Podcast Network. Here's your host, Jerry Knapp.
Welcome to another edition of Once a Raider, Always a Raider. I am your host, Jerry Knack, and I am joined by my special guest. He is a Heisman Trophy winner, two-time Super Bowl champion, Super Bowl most valuable player. Please welcome to the program, Mr. Jim Plunkett. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jerry.
How have you been?
I've been good, pulling for the Raiders each and every week, traveling with the team, coming to the home games, I'm seeing some progress here.
Yeah, I just looked at a statistical comparison of Derek Carr over the last 15 games as opposed to 2016. He's not too far off statistically from what he did in that 12-4 campaign.
You know more about that than I do. Statistics are good. Outcome is better. When you complete that pass and what situation it is, whether you got the first down or the touchdown, that's what matters to me most.
Right. Now, Jim, 1971, Heisman Trophy winner out of Stanford. How'd you get into the game of football in the first place as a kid?
As a kid, I played everything. I was a sports kind of guy. Enjoyed you name it, baseball, basketball, football as well. Played a lot in the streets growing up. That's what we did back then, a little flag football out in the streets or two-hand touch. I started growing. I was big for my age, and I always played with the older kids and wasn't as good as they were. They kind of used me for fodder in those days. But, I learned a lot from them, and it gave me a little incentive to get better.
How'd you end up at Stanford? You're a local guy. You're from the area. So how'd you end up at Stanford?
Well, I'm from San Jose, not too far from Stanford. I wanted to go to Notre Dame as a Catholic kid growing up. A lot of the Notre Dame games on TV, but my family situation, we didn't have any money. My parents were both blind, my father legally, my mother totally, so I really couldn't go too far from home, I felt. So, Cal, Santa Clara, and Stanford were the three that I concentrated on, and for me, during that time, they're having the protest movement up at Cal and Berkeley, and I didn't want to get involved in that. Santa Clara was a small, division two or three school, and I wanted to play Division One, and so Stanford was my choice. And also, we took a fifth grade class trip to watch a Stanford game on a bus. And as they do, they bring in schools from all around, and that was my first introduction to Stanford and Stanford football. And as a 10-year-old, I was quite impressed with it.
So Stanford, while you were there, you pretty much put them on the map. You were playing in big-time bowl games during your career there, and obviously as a quarterback leading the team to these big-time bowl games. What were some of the more memorable moments in your college career?
Well, there were several, but you got to remember that in those days, the Pac-8 only went to one bowl game, and that was the Rose Bowl. It was only until later that they did they expanded and they could qualify for other bowls. But there was only one bowl game we could go to, and that was the Rose Bowl. And we came so close, losing to SC in two very close games, 27-24 with a broken play, last-second field goal my junior year. And then finally, our senior year, we finally beat them and got to the Rose Bowl. But it was a struggle. Stanford hadn't been to the Rose Bowl in 19 years. And I felt we could have gone all 3 years. We came that close. But finally got there my senior year and went on to defeat an undefeated Ohio State team.
I bet that was a thrill.
Oh, it was. It was big time. This was shot for when you got, you first stepped on campus and got involved in the football program. That was your goal, to get to the Rose Bowl and obviously win it.
And obviously Ohio State a national power as well for a long time.
Oh, yeah, without question. That team that we beat had some tremendous players, a lot of NFL draft picks, and in their career they were 31-1. That senior group that we went up against.
That's pretty impressive to go out there and beat that team. What was the experience just playing in the Rose Bowl? It's called the granddaddy of them all.
Right.
It's, all the pageantry and everything else that goes with it.
Oh, it's a very exciting time in my life. Here, quote-unquote, a poor kid from San Jose, finally stepping on a a giant platform such as the Rose Bowl. And plus, you know, I owe it to the guys I played with. I played, played three varsity years at Stanford, played 17 years in the NFL, and to this day, those are my closest friends. We do things together. We keep in touch. And it was very exciting for me.
Drafted by the New England Patriots, and even back then, as it is today, when you're drafted that high by a struggling team, you're expected to be the franchise savior, the face of the franchise. You're supposed to be the guy to come in and take the team to the promised land. What was your experience in New England like?
Well, it was, you know, it wasn't the team that it is today. That's for sure. They were in those days there was 14 games, so they were one of the 13 when they drafted me. But my rookie year, you know, you wanted to take the league by storm, and you know, I did the best I could. But I made rookie of the year. We had a quote unquote somewhat successful season, and then you know, we struggled, and it was a tough situation for me. You know, and eventually after 5 years of you know, getting hurt, getting knocked around. For me, I felt it was time to move on. I asked to be traded, and I wanted to get back to the West Coast. So I got traded to the 49ers, and somewhere where I really wanted to work out for me. It did not. 2 years later, I was cut, and I was out of football. And Mr. Davis contacted my agent, Wayne Hooper, and I came over here to the East Bay, right where the field were almost right now, just down the road, but came out and tried through for Tom Flores, and he said I was, you know, that they were going to sign me, and you know, kind of the rest is history. Took a while. Kenny Stabler was the quarterback, so I played a year behind him. They traded him for Pastorini, still number two, and then Dan got hurt, gave me the opportunity, and, you know, I started my last 8 years here at Oakland.
Now, adversity is obviously something that you dealt with, you know, your entire life. At what point was that lump in your neck discovered?
Oh, that's when I was in high school, actually, when I was being recruited by Stanford. I agreed to go to Stanford, signed a letter of intent and all that, what you do coming out of high school. And then one of the things you have to do before you go to college, you take a physical. And they found a lump in my throat. It was cancerous. And so the thing that endears me most, and I had to have surgery to get it removed, and the thing that endears me more so than anything I can think of really to Stanford was that Rod Rust, who was an assistant coach, was kind of the guy who was handling me. I called him up. I told him, you know, Coach, I still want to go to Stanford, but I'm going to have surgery, and I may not be able to play football for you. And Rod Rust said, that's okay. We understand, and you still have your scholarship. In those days, you know, if you couldn't play, they'd take your scholarship away. So, you know, Stanford means a very – means a lot to me.
Well, as you mentioned, you come over to the Raiders eventually in the late 70s and in the trade for Pastorini. Dan breaks his leg in week five, and you come off the bench. And within a game or two, the team was 2-3 when you took over as starting quarterback. Within a game or two, you guys – got on quite a roll. I think everybody credits that Monday Night Football game at Pittsburgh as kind of the launching pad for the rest of the season. First team to score more than 40 points at Three River Stadium in forever. And you had a big night that night. You dueled with Terry Bradshaw on national television, and all of a sudden the 1980 Raiders were kind of on their way.
It was quite the turnaround. There's no question about it. We beat a San Diego team that we lost to earlier in the year when Dan was at quarterback down there. But then we started putting on a lot of points, and we really got on a roll, as you say. And, you know, that the second Charger game, that Monday night game in Three Rivers Stadium, you know, they were big turning points for us. And plus, we won a lot of close games, you know. And we took a little bit of a beating by Philly that year, 10-7.
I think you took a beating by Philadelphia.
Yeah, 7 sacks. That's not easy to stand up to. But anyway, we qualified for the wild card won, you know, 2-3 tough games to get there. You know, first wild card team to get to the Super Bowl. You know, we had to go to Actually, Houston came to us, and they had Kenny Stabler then, and we knocked them off. We went to a frozen Cleveland stadium, and their kicker, I can't think of his name.
Don Cockcroft.
Yeah, Cockcroft missed two extra points, and we win the game 14-12, and they're on our seven-yard line, and Brian Sipe throws an interception to end the game, or else they would have won it. And then we go back to the Chargers, which we split during the course of the season, and I can't remember the exact score. It's like 34-27, something like that. And they, you know, they had the ball, and we had the ball. I take it back. And 6 minutes to go in the game, and we were able to keep possession, and I'd give Dan Fouts and company a chance to win the game. So it was quite the trip for me and for the Raiders at that time. And then we face it. Once again, the tough Philadelphia team who knocked off Dallas, who had beaten us during the regular season as well. And we weren't going to let that happen again.
How big of an acquisition was Kenny King that year, 1980?
Oh, huge. He had a great great season for us. You know, had a record-breaking 80-yard touchdown reception at that time in the Super Bowl. And if you knew Kenny King, his hands weren't that good. But, you know, he caught that that particular pass and ran the rest of the way with it for a score. It was a great moment. It was a great moment for me, having been out of football briefly. Never been in a playoff game in my life until that year. So it was very exciting for me.
You know, you kind of go back and look at that season, you know, Kenny King's impact in the game against San Diego in the regular season that you won. He had an 89-yard touchdown run in that game, which was the longest in the league that year. Everybody talked about that speed element that he brought to the team that the Raiders are missing for a couple of years after having Clarence Davis. Always reliable, Mark Van Egan, of course. But there was kind of this lull in speed at the tailback position, and Kenny brought that.
Yeah, you know, of the other quarterbacks and Clarence Davis and the others they had there, you know, they were obviously good, solid running backs, but nobody with the speed of a Kenny King. And he certainly it was a big difference maker, coming up with big plays both on the ground and through the air. And it was, you know, it was an exciting time for us. We were doing all the right things at the right time. You know, the close games we came away with and won for the most part, and others we just put on a bunch of points and they couldn't outscore us.
You know, I've always wondered about that Cleveland game, and I've watched it recently a couple of times all the way through. It's amazing what you can find on YouTube. And it just, you know, I grew up in Western New York, you know, and we always would go play in the park and on frozen ground and whatnot. But I just couldn't imagine what it was like that day for you as a quarterback trying to throw the football. But on the two touchdown drives that you guys engineered, you had some big pass plays, and Raymond Chester was huge for you that day.
He was. You know, Raymond was a great tight end. You know, he played for the Raiders twice. Played for the Raiders, went to Baltimore, came back. Great guy and somebody you want on your ball club, because not only is he's a great player, but his mindset was, you know, encouraging to everybody. Let's get the job done. He was one of the team leaders of many that we had on the team that year.
Now, you and Tom Flores have you know, formed a friendship that exists to this day. I can't tell you how many pregame meals that I've been to where I sat with you and Tom, and, you know, on road trips you guys spent a lot of time together. But that bond was forged, you know, 40 years ago. How did that happen? Was it immediate? Was it natural? Was it something you guys kind of initially had to work at? How did your relationship with Tom Flores begin when you came to the Raiders?
I think it's more natural than anything else. You know, I came to the Raiders struggling, you know, as I said, having been released by the Niners. And he was a former quarterback. And so he kind of knew what I was going through. And he helped me through all that time. You know, he's the one who made the decision to Al that, you know, when I went out and tried out and threw for Tom, out there on the practice field, he said, you know, I could still throw the football, and there's no reason why we shouldn't sign him. And then he was a receiver coach my first year or two when I got here, and then he became a quarterback's coach, and then he became head coach. So, you know, a lot of mentoring came from Tom, you know, and we had quite a successful thing going, the two of us, and, you know, and the bond just grew over time.
1983, you guys had a little different year. You were starting quarterback for much of it. 12-4 that year, AFC West division winner. It wasn't one of these, you know, finish tied with somebody else and win right. a tiebreaker and get in. You guys won the division outright and basically trampled everybody going through the playoffs, beat Seattle in the AFC Championship game, and then faced the defending Super Bowl champion, Washington Redskins. What was that experience like?
We were really good that year. There's no question about it, offensively, defensively. You know, we were a quote-unquote a juggernaut, if I may say so. And I think me thinking, you know, especially in the Super Bowl, that the only guy that could ruin that game would be me. So I was determined not to make any mistakes. And then, of course, Marcus Allen had the huge game. Defense scored on a blocked punt. So we had things going from the get-go. We were very, very, you know, Mike Haynes, Lester Hayes at the corners. We were really good.
Yeah, the defense seemed to be as good as the 80 defense was. Even better in 83, Lyle Alzado comes in and he adds something. We're still not sure what, but Lyle comes in and adds.
Yeah, Howie Long.
Yep.
We Mark Rod Martin, we were very good defensively.
Rod Martin's got to be one of the most underrated defensive players to ever play the game of football. Three interceptions in Super Bowl 15.
Right.
Not to take anything away from the day you had and winning MVP, but an argument could have been made for Rod.
No, it couldn't. No. I'm just kidding.
You look at the 83 team, and as you said, the trade for Mike Haynes
right.
to pair with Lester Hayes, Van McElroy and Mike Davis at safety, plus some of the other, backup players that came in and played in nickel and dime situations. I talked to Joe Theismann years and years ago, and I asked him, it was a loaded question. I said, what's your worst memory of pro football? And I thought he was going to talk about Lawrence Taylor. And he said, no, he still had nightmares of Howie Long chasing him in the Super Bowl.
Not only chasing him, but catching him. You know, we had a lot of pressures, a lot of sacks. Those guys were good.
Yeah, and not only you mentioned the punt block for a touchdown by Derek Jensen, but Jack Squirek comes off the bench right before halftime, intercepts a pass, runs it back for a touchdown. What I've always found interesting about that particular play is Washington killed you with that play earlier in the regular
right.
season. It was to the other side of the field, but Joe Washington had a big gainer on that in a very, very close game that Marcus didn't play in. And, you know, coaching staff, and I hear stories that Johnny O brought it up, John Otten on the sideline to Charlie Sumner, and next thing you know, Squirek goes in the game, and it's a pick six, and Washington never got close after that.
No, our coaching staff did a fabulous job with reading what they might do in that situation, and they were right on in that situation. And then, we haven't mentioned Marcus Allen and the phenomenal game he had, changing fields, coming up with long runs. He was just a tremendous player that day.
You know, what's funny is he did it against Seattle the week before in the AFC Championship game. He had one of those reverse the field runs.
Right.
It wasn't as long or as spectacular, but, that was kind of something that was in Marcus's bag of tricks. He wouldn't give up on a play.
He was a great cutback runner. He was his entire career, both at USC and with the Raiders. And, and he's big and strong. If you're going to touch him, you better have both hands wrapped around because he's going to take you for a ride.
And if you look at his build, at least you look at him from television, he seems slight, right? I mean, unless you're with him and with him in person, you don't realize how big Marcus Allen really is.
Yeah, he's tall. He's tall for a running back. He was just a great player.
Yeah, when I got to finally meet him in person, I was actually really surprised at how big he is, not just height-wise, but he's a physical.
He's put together.
Yes,
no
he is. One of the things that you were always famous for was the deep ball. Obviously tradition with the Raiders, going back to Daryl LaMonica. Tom could sling it, obviously, but LaMonica was known for really
right.
airing it out. Kenny, not so much, even though he could do it when he had to. But you were known for throwing the deep ball, not only far, but pretty accurate. Was this a natural ability, or was it something you worked at?
Well, you work at everything you do, But, I was always one of the bigger kids in class. So ever since high school, college, NFL, I was always looking for that deep pass, somebody to get open. It's just, it's second nature to me. always looking for the big play, maybe too often, you know, and I got in trouble occasionally. but, you know, even if you didn't complete it sometimes, I thought it put the fear of God in that defender. And so the next time you run a hook or an out, he's going to be so far off because he's afraid to be deep. So all of a sudden it was just pitch and catch because they were so far off.
Would you say the Raiders teams that you played with from a skill position perspective were the more talented teams that you played with compared to the 49ers and the Patriots?
Oh, without question. At that time, especially that 84 team, we were loaded.
Yeah, because you had a chance to play with Cliff Branch and Todd
Bobby
Christensen,
Bob Chandler.
Yeah, and Raymond Chester. A couple of years ago, Kenny King told me something interesting about that 80 Super Bowl. One of the things that drove the Eagles nuts was you guys didn't have to substitute personnel in long down and distance situations because you could go spread five guys out because everybody knew the pass patterns. So Kenny King could be your slot guy or run a slot pattern even from the backfield, that all these guys were active and could do things in a passing game. So the Eagles didn't have the opportunity to, like, say, bring in extra defensive backs because you didn't have to change personnel.
Well, believe me, you didn't want Kenny King out there split out in the you know, his hands weren't that great, no offense. But also in those days, it wasn't like today, you know. Specialization, you know, five guys come in, five guys go off the field. What they do with personnel today is almost mind-boggling, you know, unless you're used to it like these players are today. But, no, you know, the team that started on first down, played second down, played third down. Very few substitutions back in the day.
Yeah, it really is surprising. But as Kenny King mentioned to me, is, you know, these guys all knew the passing game and could all participate and be threats downfield and create matchup nightmares for people.
But that's the way it was. That's, you know, that's what you had to do. You know, if I put Kenny in the slot and told him to run, you know, if I the way our system worked is you call the main pattern and the backs know what to do underneath. You don't really have to tell them what to do unless you want to do something specific.
Yep. Now, this might be it's an interesting subject, but it's been in the news a lot lately, and that's the Pro Football Hall of Fame and what they're going to do next year with this, kind of this expanded class. Tom Flores was a finalist for the first time ever for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Unfortunately, and Frank Cooney explained this to me, is that Tom will be considered as a head coach. Like, we can't consider his entire body of work with, you know, four Super Bowl rings and all this other stuff. So it kind of almost hinders him a little bit. If you were voting, if it was up to you, Tom Flores goes in the Hall of Fame?
Oh, without question. You know, he handled a team that was, you know, kind of run by Mr. Davis, you know, but he stood his ground, you know, and he got us to play some great football when I was here. My hat's off to Tom, and there's no question that he should be in the Hall of Fame. You know, there's other head coaches, one or two, as Tom did, and, you know, and they're not in they're in the Hall of Fame. Yeah, so I think Tom deserves to be there.
You know, you kind of look at Cliff Branch as well. You know, unfortunately, we lost Cliff not that long ago. And, you know, Cliff, if you compare his numbers to his contemporaries, there's only, like, one other guy that compares to him, and that's John Stallworth.
Right.
And Stallworth is in the Hall of Fame. Cliff is
– and Lynn Swann is in the Hall of Fame. You know, I mean, and not that they don't deserve not to be there, because they do, but, you know, certainly Cliff does. All the excitement and the deep passes that man caught, he should certainly be in the Hall of Fame.
But he also did it in crunch time. He's still number four all time in playoff receiving yards. I mean, that had to be, for you as a quarterback, you know, the best feeling in the world to know you had this guy with world-class speed, but also could catch the ball, run routes, and really affect defense.
he was a great deep threat. There's no doubt about him. People played off him, and that gave him the opportunity to catch the ball underneath. but, you know, the two Super Bowls we played in, he made the plays that counted. And so, you know, I owe a big debt to Cliff, as well as the other receivers, but, you know, Cliff in particular.
You threw touchdowns to him in both Super Bowls.
Right.
And, again, that had to be, you know, a comforting feeling to know you had that. But it seems like you had reliable skill position guys at every position.
Yeah. As we've mentioned them already, but yeah, Chandler, Chester, the list goes on.
Yeah. I had Mark Van Egan on the show recently, and you'd mentioned to it, alluded to it, but one of the things that he told me was that one of the proudest moments of his career was that six-minute drive in the AFC Championship game 1980 at San Diego where you guys get the ball back. I think you threw the ball one or two times on that drive.
I think once to Cliff on a crossing route because I told him if they played man just to keep running and got him one pass, and then I ran for some yardage. But it was Mark Van Egan and the offensive line taking charge then.
And the Chargers never touched the ball again?
Nope.
And I think it was it might have been Hendricks. The joke was that he said something on the sideline, hey, don't let him get the ball back. We can't stop him.
Yeah, exactly. He grabbed me by the jersey and shook me right in front of him. And he says, keep driving the ball because we can't stop him. So that's exactly what happened. Scared the heck out of me. I did what I was told.
Well, the great thing about that game was you got out to a big lead, and it was almost by accident. The ricochet pass to Raymond Chester, 60-plus yards to start the game, and you guys kind of put on a little bit of an avalanche of points to start the game
right
before San Diego could recover, and then you were able to hang on to the big lead.
Yeah, and, that happens, San Diego was an explosive offense, and they finally got their footing after, we started off with that tremendous start that we got and put points on the board every time we touched the ball early in the game, but, you can never count Dan Fouts and that Chargers offense out of the game.
No, not at all. Last thing for you, Jim, you've always stayed involved with the Raiders in one capacity or another. You've done some television, you've done some radio, you've done a lot of different things, still doing television for the Raiders. Put that into perspective.
When I stopped playing for the Raiders in '88, I went and visited with Al and I said, I'd like to continue being a part of the Raider organization. And he got me right into it, doing the preseason TV, the radio for the games, and now the highlight show. So, I'm very thankful for, Mr. Davis's, support, and he stood by me the whole time. When nobody wanted me, actually, at the very beginning. He was a tremendous human being. I know he was a difficult man to work with around the league and sometimes for his players, but the man knew football. And, my hat's off to Mr. Davis.
Well, Jim, ever since I started with the Raiders, can you believe just about almost 20 years ago, you've always been gracious with me, and I count you as a friend. And,
same here.
Thank you. I hate to put it this way, but you were one of my childhood heroes, and it's always a thrill to be able to sit down and chat with you about stuff.
All right. Thanks, Jerry.
That's going to do it for this edition of Once a Raider, Always a Raider. I am your host, Jerry Nack, for my special guest, Jim Plunkett, who one day hopefully will be saying Pro Football Hall of Famer Jim Plunkett, but for two-time Super Bowl champion Jim Plunkett. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to Once a Raider, Always a Raider on the official Raiders Podcast Network. We'll be right back.